Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm speaking to Matan Kubowski about how CTOs and tech leaders can measurably improve team performance, not with rigid frameworks or annual reviews, but through clarity, alignment, and mentorship. We talk about why 50% of managers give no feedback at all, what the top 5% do differently, and how to create a culture of high performance without becoming a micromanager. If you've ever struggled with giving feedback that actually sticks, this one's for you. I'm your host, Adam Horner, and as a coach, I help CTOs from startups to enterprises to lead with clarity, confidence, and strategic impact. And just before we go on, I want to let you know about something new I've built, and it ties directly into what you'll hear today in today's episode. If you've ever felt like there's no instruction manual for being a CTO, you're not alone. I felt that too, and I hear it constantly from the CTOs and tech leaders that I work with. It's why I created this podcast and why I release it every week, because CTO leadership is hard, and I believe you shouldn't have to figure it all out on your own. So now, I brought everything together under one brand, the CTO Playbook. It's the new home for this podcast, our growing community, and a full suite of coaching programs designed to support you through every stage of the technology leadership journey. Think of it like a mountain. The hard climb begins not at the very bottom, but at base camp, laying the foundation, preparing you to lead, and setting your direction of travel. Then comes the elevate phase, where you climb, apply what you've learned, and face more complex, high-stakes challenges. And when the terrain gets steep and personal, there's CTO Ascent, a one-to-one coaching program offering tailored support for the most demanding parts of your journey. I've recently announced the launch of CTO Basecamp, a new cohort-based coaching program for tech leaders, strengthening the leadership foundation. If you're ready to stop figuring it out the hard way and start leading with clarity, confidence, and strategic impact, the waitlist is now open with early access and a discounted rate for those who join early. To learn more about CTO Basecamp, CTO Ascent, and what's coming next with CTO Elevate, visit thectoplaybook.com. Now, let's get to know Matan and what he can teach us about giving feedback. Matan, welcome to the CTO Playbook. Great to have you here.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for having me. We waited a long time to do it, and we finally have the opportunity.
Let's make sure the wait was worth it, hey? So let's just learn a little bit about you. So, I mean, you've been coaching people for a while now, but let's sort of wind the clock back a bit and get a bit of an idea of who you are and where you come from. So could you just start off telling us a little bit about yourself, Matan, and then how you got to where you are?
Right. Okay. That's a good question. So I graduated in 2008, and since then I've been working as a software developer. And essentially in 2011 was the first time I got an engineering management position, if you will. And I kind of fell in love in this position because it's a totally different role than just being a developer. Most of my experience is actually in cybersecurity companies. And in 2014, actually, I was part of the founding team of a startup that was called Elusive. And then at the maximum, we were almost 200 people. And I managed the whole engineering team as a CTO. And basically, after 7.5 years, we got acquired by a huge cybersecurity company from the States. And since then, I've been doing what I do today as a mentor and consultant to CTO.
Excellent. And so you mentioned that a lot of your background was in sort of cybersecurity. Was that from any particular angle of cybersecurity or just covering the whole remit of information security?
Mostly from the detection part. So mostly in cybersecurity, there's detection, prevention, remediation, visibility. And most of my experience is coming from detection. Basically, we created a company around the concept that from the 90s, it's actually called honeypots, but we turned it into deceptions. And we had many, many patents and innovation around that. And this is what brought that to the masses, if you will, because we kind of commoditized this idea that was from research. So catching attackers, and we had a lot of experience in dealing with cybersecurity defense.
Yeah, because it's a huge topic. Obviously, it covers a lot of Europe, but I imagine a lot of the companies you're looking at on, I think it was the East Coast of the US, if you said, as well as Israel, right?
Right. So that was the main part. Clients, we had our face looking to the United States, but also Western Europe. So many of the huge banks and large retail in the US were our clients. But this is a previous incarnation because there were already a few years that passed since then.
Yeah, indeed. So tell us a little bit about some of the more recent things you've been doing, because I think what you've been looking at, just to give everybody a bit of context, is essentially improving performance in organizations and tech teams. Is that right?
Right. So since 2022, I kind of crossed the street from being a product company into a consultancy. And right. I've been doing that in the last 3 years with CTOs and VPs of engineering. And essentially what I found and what I realized is that many engineering organizations, especially in startups and scale-ups, where the HR organization are not that mature, they lack the skills or the muscle for doing performance management to their team members. So with that in mind, I came to create something that would be a little bit more formalized or structured to help engineering managers to manage the performance of their teams. So not the performance of their products, but the performance of the team members.
And the individuals within that, right?
Exactly. And it goes under a very simple equation or formula that basically says that the performance of a certain team member is the combination of their results and their behaviors. And by looking into that angle, it helps a lot of managers to start measuring their team members.
And when you say team members, are you sort of measuring from the leader down into the team or also measuring peers within the team as well?
That's a good question. So typically, the recommendation is to start from the top, from the CTO or the VP of engineering, and then through the hierarchy to trickle down the performance management into all the leads in the organization tree, and not through the peers. So it will be ultimately between the manager and the team member. I'm also a big advocate of me. So the feedback can come from the team member to the manager as well.
So that's a great perspective. So what were the sort of the typical things that you would see early on that made you think, I've got to work on this performance thing? What were sort of the bottlenecks or the challenges that you came across before you began to realize that you could sort of proceduralize this?
So I encountered many organizations, and also as part of my personal experience, we used to do annual performance reviews. You're probably familiar with those tedious processes. No one really likes them. I would tell that. I'm working with a few CTOs that no one really likes that. Sometimes it's coming from a higher directive. We just need to do it. Sometimes it takes a few days just to complete a certain form on an individual, on an IC or someone that reports to that manager. But what is it even worse is that no one really gets back to the annual performance review after it's been finalized. So maybe the top performing managers, the ones that are true, really proactive and really go back to what they have done, go back to those performance reviews or semi-annual reviews and surface those elements of feedback to their direct reports. And what's problematic about that is that people don't really learn and grow and get better because of that.
It turns into a bit of a checkbox exercise, doesn't it? We've got to do this thing, so we'll fill in a form, write it out, and then job done. We can put it in the dusty drawer and leave it till next year.
And that's it. And then what I learned from failures that I personally had is that I had managers that reported to me, that came to me and told me, you do not give me enough feedback. Okay, I took that into consideration. Probably it's on me, but also on the person, because each individual needs a different amount of feedback. Right. But there were also others that came and said, you gave me feedback, but you didn't help me to go through that feedback and succeed and learn and grow based on that feedback.
So no follow through.
Exactly. And then came Microsoft and Adobe in 2011 and started to adopt a much more ongoing feedback processes. And Netflix innovated in 2017 with all of their Netflix culture and start, stop, continue concepts to...
Just quickly summarize those for us, for those of us who are not familiar with the Netflix culture especially.
So basically what they did is, we are going to be really radical about how we give feedback. We're going to ditch annual performance reviews. We're going to adopt few concepts that are going to accelerate our day-to-day work, essentially by using a start, stop, continue framework that basically means that every meeting that is designed to be a feedback meeting can have a bidirectional talk with the following concept. Something that one person can tell the other person to start doing, something that the one person can tell the other person to stop doing, and something to continue to pursue should be very kind, not scolding, not diminishing the other, but with the purpose of a good intention for the mutuality, but also for the sake of the organization. And yeah. according to the Netflix guideline, this is one of the elements that allowed them to succeed in such a great manner.
And do you happen to know if they're still using this sort of framework today? Is it something that's sort of baked into their culture?
In Netflix? Yeah. You mean in Netflix? Wow, I do not know that. I hope they do. They still use the radical candor concept, which is like the high level, all of these concepts or tactical concepts.
Yeah, the founding part of it. Cool. Okay, exactly. So you saw this and you thought, okay, so that this sort of indicates that there's a better way then, right?
Right. And this is something that I started to use. So instead of keeping the annual or semi-annual review, let's move into something that is more ongoing. And then I read this article, I think it was originally from McKinsey, said that the world divides into this beautiful pie chart of managers, not just engineering managers, but managers as a whole. 50% of, and this was a real eye-opener for me. So 50% of the managers do not give any feedback.
50%, that's an immense proportion.
I know. This is why I was so amazed by seeing that. And then 35 of the remainder of the managers give some feedback, and then only 10% share their expectations on top of that feedback. So there are ones that do not give any feedback. 35, these are the 50%. 35 tell an engineer, you're not good enough. Only 10% share their expectations. So for example, sometimes you lack giving enough attention to details, and this produces more bugs, more quality issues in production.
But only, and that fits with my experiences so clearly as well, because I've had the same epiphany at some point that I was actually working with a team. I took over another team, and the previous leader had been trying to get the team to go in a very specific direction. He was really trying to teach them how to do this thing, but it didn't align at all with what the business needed. So the team was making great progress in a relevant direction, basically. I took over the team and I basically took all of that stuff back to basics and said, okay, the company needs to go in this direction. I'm going to give you one thing, and that's its direction. Not even like a quantity of improvements or anything like that. Just literally, this is the direction to go in. And it just changed performance overnight. I mean, so that just fits with that kind of number, that there's only very few people who say, here's the expectation of actual goal.
So what you refer to now, if I understood you correctly, is the alignment phase. What I'm saying is, even without the mentoring part, by the way, I didn't mention the last 5% of the managers. Now I'm gonna connect everything together, because the last 5% are the managers who give the feedback, share their expectations, but this is the hardest part. They also do the mentoring and the guidance to the individual in order for them to meet the expectation. But what you touched upon is just the first part, which is amazing because it produces a lot of impact on the performance. Even the alignment setting on what's important in that organization. Have you seen that in a similar fashion?
I mean, yes, for me, that was very early on in my leadership career, if you like. And that's when I realized that the direction beats any amount of teaching, coaching. If you just get people going in the right direction, it's the single most powerful thing I've ever discovered. And it just fits exactly with those statistics you just gave. So it's not surprising, really. But I was really shocked by the fact that 50% give no feedback at all. That just shows how big of a room for improvement there is just in the quality of management overall.
Right. I think that the original report says 50% give no feedback or implicit feedback. So they sugarcoat the feedback in a way that in many cases it doesn't do any improvement or any magic.
Yeah. So in that case, you might as well not be giving strong feedback or strong guidance, because you're basically giving platitudes, really.
Exactly. Yeah. The bubble wrapping is terrible.
It's a good way of putting it. So in terms of your own personal experience then, Matt, where was one of those occasions where you thought, okay, I can do something significantly different here?
Maybe I'll share something that, maybe it's not a good idea. I need to think about it a few moments. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, so where was one of those occasions, I guess probably relatively early on, when you thought, I can do this in a much better way, I can really help teams go in a better direction here?
I think that one cool example that is relevant here is a case where, as a manager, where I just assumed the CTO position, I had one team lead in the engineering team that I really believed in him. But the entire organization outside of the engineering department did not.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So everyone told me, this guy is negative. He is not a good fit for a startup. He's saying no way to, and we cannot allow ourselves to have people that are naysayers. But what I had in mind is a big, strong belief in that person, mainly because I saw his potential and I believe that he was not utilized well, or we didn't use the right APIs on him before that.
And the right personal APIs, yeah.
Exactly. And I think what was amazing is that this person had stayed in the organization for additional 4 years after I assumed the position, mainly because of my initial fight for him to remain in that position. But after that, he kind of flourished because he assumed the team lead, the engineering management manager position. He managed between 6 to 10 people throughout these 4 years. So he had a massive impact on our startup. And basically what helped us, or helped me to do it, is setting those expectations, having quick wins to demonstrate that maybe he used to say no way too often before that, but now when things develop and he sees his impact and he is brought with enough context about the features that he's working on, he feels much more connected to the organization and to the work, the day-to-day work. And eventually the team, the sales teams and peers from the outside, not from the engineering team, really worked well with him. So we kind of recreated his firmware or API within the entire organization to help everyone use that resource in a much better fashion.
So that's quite a turnaround story. I mean, for me, I think I look at that, there's several things going on there that probably is worth unpacking that as a story a little bit. So, I mean, clearly there was the fight for him at the beginning, which was give this person a chance, give him a second stab at the success here. And then the next step was what? To make it very clear to him what was needed, or very clear what the feedback had been on him? What was the next step for you?
Yeah, you're spot on. The first phase was first between myself to myself to map his potential against the results, my expectations, my core expectations on results and behaviors. And when I did that mapping, I saw that in the results part, he could be 100% because he was super sharp. He was one of the first developers of the company. He came with a lot of experience. So he had what it takes to win the results part. But the behaviors part, he had some challenges, but only in one core expectation. Imagine I only had 5 core expectations and he scored really low on multiple. That was a different situation. It was just one, the can-do attitude or the naysaying approach. And since there was just one, I took the leap of belief to say, okay, I will make the second part with him. And the second part was exactly what you said. My main conversation was with my boss, who was the CEO. Just give me a chance. I'm going to make it straight. If it doesn't work, we will let him go. But the most important part, as you said, was directly with him. Listen, we're going to do it together. There is one thing that we must work on. I know your challenges. You have a say. There is something in what you say, but it has to change. This negativity has to change. Instead of saying no, game over, we can say yes.
A very powerful construct.
And then step by step, I think that this what made the turnaround.
Oh, and was that one singular piece of advice enough, or did that sort of, was that ended up being sort of the tip of the needle, if you like, and there was a lot of supporting elements that went with that to help him correct that behavior that was perceived as not helpful?
To be honest, I think I wasn't aware so much to what I'm saying right now.
Right.
So the answer would be it was just the talk of conversation that led to all the success that came afterwards. Maybe just initial good or positive feedback when I saw demonstrations of positivity, but just in the beginning. It Nice. Wasn't a long process. It was a very quick turnaround, surprisingly enough. And I'm happy that it turned around this way.
Excellent. And so there's a really good example of a relatively quick turnaround, which just gets to that sort of first stage. So you've obviously seen many more cases since then that some of them get more complex, some of them get more involved, because when you're dealing with a team, it's often not just one individual, but many more people in a team. So in terms of scaling that individual person approach to entire teams, how do you sort of balance those two together then?
So basically, when I talk about the performance management boost, it's very important that it starts from the top. When you want to implement that in an organization, it's critical that you start from the top manager who cares about performance management. And the reason being is that when you measure results and behaviors, you cannot measure it differently between teams. Eventually, if there are developers in four groups, most of those behaviors that we expect from them would be equivalent. Perhaps sometimes when there are other roles in the organization, there will be different types of behaviors or the expectations. So I would trickle in everything from the top to the leaves, and considering those behaviors and results one by one. So comparing those results and behaviors on each individual, and each team lead or each engineering manager should have their own dashboard of comparing the performance of the team members on their teams.
Okay, so there's an element of comparison between team members, but also across teams as well.
Exactly. So let's take an example of an engineering organization with 110 engineers. The CTO is having 5 VPs that he's managing, 5 different right. groups in different application platform and so on. So this person gives them this tool and helps each one of the VPs to define their results based on the OKRs, the company OKRs. Obviously, we're not disconnected from the OKRs.
Right, we're going to go back to that alignment thing in the beginning. Yep.
Exactly. And then they use the values of the company to align on the behaviors and maybe the attributes that are expected from each individual.
Right.
But then each VP manages their own performance management of their department, having their own dashboard of their 25 people. The CTO can make a department-wide comparison, but sometimes at this.
Cool. And those measures, in order to make those comparisons, are they as objective as possible to turn it down to a numeric score, or is there something more sort of subjective and analytical about it?
Since I'm working with startups and scale-ups, those scoring mechanisms are still not in place. And sometimes right. they don't really want to utilize them because it makes them feel as corporates. So it's yeah, exactly. They do not want to introduce friction just by having people that are opinionated from the get-go to say, oh, we are turning a corporate. Intentionally choose not to introduce those numerical systems. So for that, I introduced frequency of demonstration of those expectations. So instead of having a score between 1 to 5, you basically have a frequency of when this individual demonstrates that behavior. Let's take an example. I refer to that example. Sometimes putting attention to details or being proactive. Proactive communication in startups where everything is a bit chaotic is something that is really common. So we ask the people to be more proactive But teaching someone to be proactive is super hard. How can you tell someone to be proactive if it doesn't stem out of them to be more proactive? So then those measurements can be proactive communication. Let's say there is a question in the group or a new member joins the Slack channel. Do you proactively bring them up to speed? Because you know the context, you have the knowledge as a developer, so you can proactively basically offer them some 15 minutes to bring them up to speed on that project. And then we can measure proactive communication as a behavior. So it could be always acting proactively or often or never. And then instead of giving a numerical number, you get a coloring between like red, light green, dark green, which is the best. You can even introduce a yellow flavor if you want.
Right. So you can make it a score that's still relatively objective, but it isn't numeric and it isn't sort of corporate in its feel, but also it's tied straight back to that player feedback in that the score itself sort of says, this is how often you're doing this. This is how much you're living or embodying this particular value, behavior, or desired attribute.
Right, because then it turns to be a day-to-day work tool. You have your Notion board or Excel for the entire team, 5-6 team members. For each, there is a different sheet. And whenever you have a feedback you want to share, maybe you add that to the relevant area in that sheet. And then after a few months, you have the trend of development, of improvement, or maybe not improvement of that individual. Like you say, it turns into some day-to-day work tool.
Excellent. So you can build this up from first principles with very little tooling or knowledge, basically based on your knowledge of the company values, for example, and simply getting team leads to grade their team members on how frequently or regularly they embody this attribute.
My recommendation is once every 2 weeks. I know
once
it's
every
hard.
2 weeks.
I know it's hard. And I'm trying to avoid the double F, feedback fatigue, which is a byproduct of what Netflix created, like radical candor. Okay, how many times do you want to tell me again that I'm not putting attention to details? Okay, I've heard it 3 days ago. Okay, I'm doing my best. But still, if it's a core expectation that isn't met, I would recommend managers to ask themselves, how can you find whether, or how can you determine whether an expectation is a core expectation or not? Well, the answer would be, let's use a simple decision tree or question. If after 1 year that this individual does not meet this expectation, 1 year, the expectation is red throughout every month in the trend, do you give up on him or her? Or do you just say, hey, okay, it's not important enough, this expectation? If the answer is no, I cannot give up on this expectation, then it's a core expectation. I'll give an example.
Okay.
I'm seeing many teams that the team lead is putting right in documentation as a core expectation. And then this question comes again. What happens if after 6 months, this developer will be red? I will use the same terminology. We'll keep the red color of not meeting or demonstrating that capability. So in many times, the manager tells me, nah, I won't do anything about it. So let's remove it from the expectations.
It's not a core expectation in that case then, right?
Exactly.
And so the measurement, therefore, is quite clear, and understanding the difference between a core measurement and something that's not core is fairly binary, fairly straightforward as well. So how do people normally go wrong when trying to improve the performance? And what are the steps that you would normally advocate your leaders, your CTOs, to take in order to actually change that feedback over time?
So first, this phase is super important. I would say that alignment first between the manager, like on their own, alignment on the core expectations, it's a first phase. Then alignment with the team member on what's important for the manager or for the organization. And then I think best tip is not to choose 5 or 6 or 8 topics to improve, because this is a totally different conversation if there is someone that doesn't meet 50 and above percent of the expectations. This performance management boost is for the 90% of performance situations where there is an employee, we appreciate their work, we want to empower them to make more impact. So it's just one or two core expectations that are not being met. This is 90 or 95% of the cases. I'm not talking about those cases where we are on the edges, where there's someone that is the top performer or the lowest performer on the other edge. I'm talking about all the 95% in the middle. And then there is a tendency for managers not to deal with those minor performance issues, but I don't think they are minor. I think here, the mentoring, the one from the pie chart I mentioned earlier, the 5% managers that share the expectation but do not provide the guidance and the mentorship, this is where they need to shine. We need more of these 5%. I wish it was 35% of the managers. You have a situation where there is one or two core expectations that are not being met. So putting attention to details which causes quality, or not meeting your own estimations, or not delivering high quality code. So I would recommend not just giving that expectation, but also providing the mentorship and guidance to succeed in that. So for example, shadowing code review. Imagine there is a developer that consistently delivers code that has bugs, or the code reviewers complain that the code is having bugs. So the manager can offer 4 sessions. 2 sessions, the manager will perform the code review together with the developer before the code review is being submitted to the official code review. There will still be a code review, but the manager offers their mentorship. It's not micromanagement. And then the next 2 sessions would be the team lead, the developer would do a code review to themselves with the team lead sitting aside or on the Zoom remotely, but joining that session silently, maybe like a rubber duck. Just to listen and watch. And from my experience, this produces higher quality of the code for these individuals.
And so all those examples you gave there were examples of attributes or qualities or behaviors that we'd want to improve. And so in each case, then it's down to the leader of that team to proactively help the person to meet the clear expectation, and them showing hands-on how it would be done, what they would do, what decisions they would take, and then watching the individual as they then try and meet that same level and expectation.
Yes.
Is that fair summary of the sort of the mentoring stage? Excellent. And I think that's something that almost every leader could do. But as you say, it's one of those ones that only 1 in 20 currently do. So it seems like it would be, you know, just the knowledge that only 1 in 20 leaders do that on its own is already fairly strong feedback to be able to say, look, if you want to improve as a leader, get better at sitting with your individual contributors and helping them level up.
Right. And what's nice about the pie charts is that they speak for themselves. And specifically this pie chart, everyone can create it. So open Excel, enter 50% no feedback, 35% some feedback, 10% expectations, and 5% do the mentorship. And just tell yourself as managers where you want to put yourself. It's quite easy. We don't need the McKinsey research to read it completely in order to decide where we want, which kind of managers we want to be.
Yeah. And I think the key thing you said there, it was, and I think that's absolutely critical, because there's a lot of leaders who I know of who've had bad experiences with micromanagement, with someone who's really right into the details of what the individual is doing. And I think a lot of engineering managers really have a fear of recreating that scenario. And so as a result of that, therefore, they veer away from any kind of mentoring, hands-on help, close support, for fear that they're going to be branded or labeled as a micromanager.
Right. And you know, this phenomenon is amazing because it basically, like you said, it prevents manager from giving feedback, maybe turning into implicit, like alluding on the feedback, bubble wrapping sugar coating. We can continue on and on with those like bad words for not giving feedback. And then after encountering that so many times, I went to research, what is the definition of micromanagement? Because no one really talks about the what is micromanagement? So I found a very nice definition. A micromanager is a manager who narrows the decision-making process of a direct report when there is no need.
When there's no need for it.
When there is no need for that. That's like right. The heart of the definition. This is the thing that was the eye-opener. And I would like to argue that if there is a core expectation, and then again, going back to choose only the core expectations, then there is a need to do that mentorship. And then it doesn't fall into the definition of micromanagement. We need to do this shadowing because there is a need. There were three cases where bugs penetrated production or escaped to production because various things. I don't know what happened, but now there is a need for me to do two sessions of code review together, like pair code review, and then two code review sessions that you would do.
And is that for a magic number that you've discovered through sort of an empirical observation of team members as they go through mentor people? Or is that something that 4 weeks just seems like a good number and works a lot of the time?
It works. It already moves the needle. And then it allows the manager to ask themselves a nice question after these four occasions, if no improvement happened or took.
Right.
Maybe there is two more that are needed. Maybe we already see the trend of improvement. This is good. Keep it up, dear team member, dear employee. Keep it up. Continue using this rubber duck tool that I gave you and do it for yourself in the next 1 month. I will continue monitoring without that pair programming, but we did four times. You do four times to yourself. Tell me how it goes. Remember, these are team members that we want to empower. We like them. These are within the 95% that we want to push, to stretch.
Yeah. Good performers we want to make excellent rather than poor performers we want to make average. Yeah. Right. And so just going back to that sort of fear of the micromanagement, the way we avoid that labeling of micromanagement is by basically sticking to the core things that need to be improved and not managing on every little detail everywhere else that is not core, that isn't relevant to just improving in that one area where they're slipping up.
Yes, because otherwise the conversation with the team member, the developer, easily go to places where the manager falls back. Yeah, you know what? It's not a good example. And we don't want, we want those discussions to happen. I'm not trying to create just yes men, but we really want those discussions to take place on the core expectations. So choose just between 3 and 5 on the results. And three and not no more than 3 or 5, up between 3 to 5 on the behaviors. This is like the rule of thumb.
And I think that's a fairly good number. I don't think I've ever seen an organization that sensibly has more than that in terms of the core expectations on the way that people operate, the results they deliver, and the way that they do it.
So that's a good start.
Cool. And so in terms of the overall playbook, then I'm going to try and summarize it down. Let's hear how well I do on this one. So I think the first point you made here is, and that's fairly straightforward, is that this is a playbook, but it isn't something that's sort of a multi-step, super scientific approach. It is approachable. It's straightforward from the point of view of understanding what we need to do. And it's not as hard as people sometimes make it out to be. So the first clear step then was the expectations. Get the expectations right between the individual and the leader and the CTO. Step 2 was really about just making sure that ongoing feedback has a good cadence of measuring it, how frequently the behaviors are being embodied. And that was ongoing at a frequency of every 2 weeks on your approach to it.
Which is not just the momentarily point, but also the trend. This is something that not everyone really has if they're using the quarterly or semi-annual or annual reviews.
Right. And I think that's a key point. I mean, if you're in an organization where you've only got annual reviews, immediately switching to quarterly or adding quarterly in is often no problem from an HR perspective, but can massively improve the process from that perspective. And then adding in the two weekly measurement approach seems to be a way to get a very good continuous measurement and trend analysis, as you say. I love that. Cool. And then the last thing to put yourself into the 1 in 20 category is actually to help people with the progress on those core behaviors and on those core capabilities.
The mentorship is like the pinnacle. It's the hardest, but it gives the buttoning up of the performance.
That's a good phrase, that buttoning up performance to a good level. Excellent. Matt, and what's the best way for people to get hold of you if they want to have a chat with you about your performance boost?
So my LinkedIn profile is up to date. Feel free to check it out and just reach out in LinkedIn or my email. All my contact details are available over there.
Cool. We'll put those links into the show notes. So you can just go into the show notes to have a look and see there. So Matan, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Thank you very much today.
Thank you so much, Adam. It was fun.
Anybody looking to boost that performance, remember that coaching help is always there and available. Until next time, keep delivering with impact.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you are listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.